What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the show. We got a really fun one for you today. I had the pleasure of sitting down and chatting with Anthony Deal, a former professional strongman and recently enthusiast, I would say, in the bodybuilding world. Anthony and I connected several months ago, although we have many of the same connections in the strength conditioning field, man. It's everybody knows everybody. So we know a lot of the same people, but we really just connected a few months back and developed a good friendship. And I really wanted to get him on. And I've been meaning to get him on for several months. And he actually went through a pretty serious health scare within the last month that I really, you know, because of the timing, we weren't able to make it work. So we ended up getting on the podcast and being able to chat just after a couple of weeks after this had all happened. And I was really fortunate that everything is okay. He's healthy and everything is good. But it was a very important conversation for us to have because there's a lot of changes that he made to his lifestyle following this recent episode. And so health episode. And so I really wanted to get his perspective on a lot of this stuff because I think a lot of it is very important for people that are training, especially if you're, you know, a man above, you know, 30, 35 years old. A lot of this stuff is going to be very applicable to you. So we had a really great conversation about a lot of that stuff and what it means. And then we got into a lot of really fun kind of nitty gritty training stuff about what, you know, what it means to train with intensity and why that's the thing that most people are missing in their training these days. But one of the reasons I really wanted to talk to Anthony was he is a fellow Christian and one that is very outspoken, which I really appreciate, especially over on Twitter. If you're over on Twitter, he has got a great account there. But I really wanted to talk to him about the views of putting emphasis on our health and our strength and our fitness as Christians and how we can do this effectively while still doing it how we're supposed to. And this has been a pretty hot topic in a lot of Christian circles for about a year or so now, really for the last couple of years since a lot of the COVID stuff happened, which is really the impetus for a lot of this conversation, especially as it relates to Anthony as a coach. And then in myself too, I've noticed a lot of this the last few years. So that was a really important and enlightening part of the conversation that I think you guys are going to enjoy a lot as well. So go follow Anthony. We got links in the show notes for all of his stuff. He's an excellent coach. If you're looking for something in that space, he does a lot of great work there as well. And it was just a really fun conversation. I think you guys are going to get a lot out of it. So before we jump into the episode, I want to remind you guys to go check out this episode's sponsor, Selway Archery Products, Drew Kohlhofer and family, staples in the traditional archery world. They make awesome, awesome rawhide and even plastic hood quivers that'll attach or slide on to traditional bows. They've hooked me up with one that's got the Nomad Strength logo laser engraved on rawhide. It's awesome. It's such high quality stuff, and they're a really important part of the traditional archery world, which is a fairly niche world within outdoors and hunting. And they do a lot of great work in that space as well. And if you follow the other podcast, Peace, Love, and Meat, that I do with Brandon Lilly, we've done a lot of bow giveaways and a lot of things that are actually still going on right now, but they have always participated and wanted to donate and give in quivers to those giveaways that we've done. So go and support Selway Archery Products. You can go to selwayarcheryproducts.com. Check out all the stuff that they have. It's great. They hand make all of them. It's extremely high quality stuff from great people. So with that being said, let's dive into this episode with Anthony Deal. All right, we're live now, man. Anthony Deal in the house joining us today. Thank you for making time, man. I'm pumped to dive into a lot of this stuff. We were about to just go off a rail before we even hit record, so I'm glad we just stopped to do it now.
I love it. I love it. Hey, man, I'm honored that you would have me on here. So
We connected. It's kind of funny. We connected, I don't know, 2 or 3 months ago on Twitter because you've been way more active over there. I mean, you're pretty active on Instagram too, but like you had said, you have Twitter for a different reason. You can say some things over there that you can't get away with without getting accounts shadow banned or straight up banned on Instagram. And so I started following you there. And then we were like, yeah, we have a lot of the same connections, which in strength conditioning world, man, everybody's connected in some capacity. So it's I'm pumped to be able to rap about some of this stuff with you. I want to start with the most recent stuff. Like, there was some other things when we originally talked about doing this that I wanted to get in there, and hopefully we will too, but you went through some pretty wild stuff in the last month, and kind of was a little bit of this, what we were talking about before, causing some of these, you know, maybe existential changes in how you approach your training and your health and stuff. So, I mean, if you want to give like a brief overview with whatever details you're comfortable with about what happened a couple of weeks back, and we can just start there.
For sure. So for just a little bit of background, I'm a pro strongman. Did that for like 8 years, and I shifted into bodybuilding, and I do bodybuilding and jujitsu. And I was a couple weeks ago, I was 8 weeks out from a competition that I was prepping for at the end of May. And my leg swelled up after a bad injection. And I've had it before where, you know, maybe it's like you nick a nerve or something like that, whatever.
Yeah.
And it kind of swells up. It's a little painful. It's not a big deal. This was a whole different level of pain.
Yeah.
And I'm the type of person, I can handle a lot of pain. My wife tells me to go to the doctor. I'm pretty stubborn. I don't do it. So when I got up Sunday morning and I was like, hey, babe, we have to go to the ER like right now. She knew something was drastically wrong.
Oh, this is real.
I pulled my shorts up and she was just blown away. There was just like a football sticking out of my leg. And so we get to the ER and, you know, and I knew that I was going septic because I had a fever that wasn't going away. My respirations were high. And ibuprofen wasn't touching this.
Yeah.
So I was getting concerned, right? So we go there immediately. They draw labs, look at everything, ultrasound it. Sure enough, there's this giant abscess from like my knee all the way up to my thigh. They're like, dude, this is like the longest thing we've ever seen. And they're like, how much did you inject? I was like, dude, 1 mL. Like it wasn't crazy.
Yeah.
1 mL. And they think it was a poorly placed shot specifically.
Gotcha.
In that it was right between the muscle belly and the fascia, and there was kind of nothing to absorb. And at this point, I'm 8 weeks out, so I'm like 7% body fat, 6% body fat, doing 2 hours of cardio a day, training really hard. And they come back, they're like, yeah, and you're also in rhabdomyolysis.
I'm like, goodness, oh, dude.
Which I would not have known that, because I knew I felt like garbage, but I just chalked it up to it's prep, man, just push harder.
You never feel good the last few weeks of a prep.
Yeah, right. You know, and I've done this before, right?
Yeah.
And I'm a coach. And so in my head, I got to lead from the front. I can't be a wuss, like, let's go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so I'm in rhabdomyolysis, and immediately they start pumping me full of fluids to take care of that. So the abscess turned out to be a blessing in disguise because I didn't know it was in rhabdo. Well, in the course of other blood work, naturally, my labs come back, kidneys and liver are off the charts. My liver enzymes were in the 500s. Okay. That's horrendous. The standard assay top end is like 45, and realistically you want to be like 25. I'm in the 500s. Now, part of that is because my body's fighting an infection and I'm in rhabdomyolysis, but still not a good place to be. And so as they're ultrasounding and trying to, get an understanding of what's going on in me. It was the MRI that they did to see my leg. They're like, hey, when we looked over part of your abdomen, like we could see your liver in a spot where it shouldn't be. And so they do a full body MRI, and along with my blood work come back and, hey, your liver, man, is huge. It's inflamed, but also I've got the left ventricular hypertrophy. So the second I heard left ventricular hypertrophy, I immediately knew, my days are done. I'm never like, we're pulling off of everything immediately. Yeah. And we need to make some changes now. And here's the thing that I feel blessed by, because sometimes when people reach that kind of catalyst in their life, if you've been a strength athlete or a bodybuilder, like it's your whole entire identity and you can go through a series of like depression. I think for me, it was almost a moment of relief because I've known this day was coming at some point. Like I had a plan in my head. My honest goal was, and I don't mind to say it, even though I didn't accomplish it, my honest goal was there's never been a pro strongman become a pro bodybuilder. I wanted to get my master's pro card in bodybuilding. And I was going to give myself until 40 to do it. And then I was going to turn everything off and focus on kind of longevity, health span.
Sure.
But when the doctor talked with me about my left ventricular hypertrophy, he kind of explained the four stages of like heart failure. And in that top stage, essentially you want 55 to 70% volume output from that left ventricle. And I'm at 55%. So essentially I'm on the bottom rung of the highest tier. So I'm still in the top quadrant for
sure
where we want to be.
Right.
But I'm way too barely low for my age, but yeah, barely. Right. Yeah. So that can be improved with getting into better cardiovascular fitness and shape and things like that. Coming off of all gear, all HGH, everything. Yeah. So immediately, like, it was a no brainer. I'm like, okay, I'm done. Like, we're done. And we're going to focus on. And the thing is, I've always cared about health, but it's always been as a means to the end of, hey, let's see how hard I can push myself and stay within the lines.
Sure.
And, you know, I heard the warnings and I felt like, this is my warning to any young men listening, is I was fortunate to come up in an era where social media was starting to become popular. I had a lot of great educational resources, a lot of mentors. I've seen a lot of people do stupid things. I never ran high amounts of drugs. I never did. I mean, I definitely ran cycles. I mean, the highest I've ever run test was like 750. You know, and I've run DECA but like, it's all been calculated. I always get my blood work before, during, and middle. I take long off seasons or health phases. I measure my biomarkers. How I determine whether or not I'm done a growth phase was always fasted blood glucose and blood pressure. Yeah. So I would go through a growth phase. And as my blood pressure climbs up, I might want to extend that phase a little bit. So I might layer in some telmisartan or some cardotone. Or if my blood sugar's starting to creep up because I'm pushing 700-800 grams of carbs, then I might start to take in some Humalog pre and post, right? Let's keep that glucose under control. And then when those things start to get out of control, despite those measures, we're done. We pull back and we go into a health phase. And so I guess what I'm saying is I wasn't an idiot about it. I didn't just YOLO run gear without doing blood work.
Right.
Like, I was diligent. I took all my ancillaries. I got blood work done constantly. And just this past November, I got a new life insurance policy and I got the best rate you could possibly get because I was like a specimen of health. My blood work was wonderful. So my point being, to go from November being a picture of health to April being in rhabdomyolysis, kidney, liver enzymes, crazy left ventricular hypertrophy and enlarged liver. And I've done this before. Well, what that tells me is, hey, man, you're not 20 anymore. You're not 25 anymore. And that stuff catches up with you fast. And you can think that you're doing all the smart things and that it's going to catch up to you. It's going to catch up. It's going to catch up quick. And I feel very fortunate because if this abscess didn't, the abscess is fine. They drained it. The hole will close. I got antibiotics, whatever. I'll be training legs in jujitsu again in like 2 weeks. We're good. If that had not occurred, I would have continued on. Right. And so I look at it as a blessing in disguise and also hopefully want to share that story with other people just to caution them. I'm certainly not going to judge anybody who runs gear. And I think you can do it in a way that is not foolish, but you just need to be very understanding of the fact that there's a difference between, I'll never say gear's healthy ever.
Sure.
You can do it in a way that's stupid, where you know, run trend for 6 months and Anadrol and all these other things. Like, you can be dumb about it, but I look at myself and I go, yeah, I feel like, honestly, I was super cautious. Maybe the only thing I didn't do over the years that I would now encourage guys to do is go get regular EKGs. Right, go look at your, you know, get your heart looked at to make sure we're not getting left ventricular hypertrophy, because that's the one that kind of scared me. It was like, hey, man, we can't be messing around with your heart health anymore. That's a little summary of the last 3-4 weeks of my life.
Well, that's wild, man, because I want to allude to a point that you made talking about how you said, you know, like, the gear will, you never will say the gear's healthy, but I don't think a lot of people realize the separation of what it takes at that level. Like when you're a professional in any of these arenas, the things that are required to A, get to that level and then stay at that level at that and, yeah. and perform, like you're never healthy, like true health in no. those situations. And no. it's the same no matter what the sport is. Like you look at any of the guys that play professional football or basketball, like they are dialed in to be the best at that, but they are not healthy, even though like they look great or they're like they're fast and they can do all these things. Like all the stuff happening inside is what the indicators of health are. And like a lot of those guys, that's why you see when it's one of my favorite like transformation things ever is like when a professional offensive lineman retires and like 7 months later you see him on TV doing analyst stuff and he's lost 130 pounds and he looks awesome and you're like, holy cow, like what were you doing to be 330 pounds and just yeah. be a behemoth for however long? And so I think yeah. a lot of people like don't understand, we're not talking about, you know, when you're saying, you know, you can do it and do it in a healthy way, but it in and of itself is not healthy, you know. Yeah,
really, realistically, all you're doing is you're mitigating the damage.
Yeah.
Right. Like the best that you can possibly do is mitigate the damage. At some 100%. Point, you're gonna, you know, pay the toll here. And and I've seen it ruin guys' lives. Like a friend was just asking me this morning, like, hey, how are you doing mentally? Like, are you okay? Like you just had to walk away from this. And I truly honestly credit that to my faith because so many guys, you know, listen, I'm bummed I can't compete. Like I really am, because I could, to be honest, I was the best shape of my life. Like I wanted that overall. And I was dense and hard and just, I was suffering, but it was fun. It was like, I knew it was working and we're getting it.
Yeah.
And if I lost my legs tomorrow, I would be, I'd probably go through some depression because I love to compete and I love to be active. But the fact of the matter is my mission as, you know, a husband and a father is, it doesn't change.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, too, also, I kind of knew this day was coming at some point. It just showed up a little before I was expecting it to.
Sure.
And so I'm kind of excited about the next phase, man. I'm coming off of everything. I'm having my doctor, you know, run my TRT, and I'm focused on like the new numbers I'm going to try to focus on are like those lab work results, right? And I also want to show guys, too, what's crazy is I know it's only been like 3 weeks since I came off of stuff. And part of it is I started eating again.
Yeah.
But I did an in-body scan this morning. I'm still at single digit body fat percentage and my strength is coming back like crazy right now.
Yeah.
And so I want to show guys what you can do, you know, because I am a huge fan of TRT. I think getting people into physiologic norms and raising, elevating test is a good thing. Mm-hmm. But as far as, you know, super physiologic goes, I want to show guys what you can do. And so I'm kind of going to shift gears a little bit more towards, I want to do a lot more hunting, right? Because that's something I'm passionate about, but don't get it to do a ton. Because when you're in bodybuilding prep, it's kind of all consuming. So I'm going to do a lot more hunting, a lot more jujitsu. My heart needs to be strong and robust. So I'll probably get back into some more races and, you know, that kind of stuff, do some rucking.
Sure.
And so I'm kind of going to pivot towards that hybrid athlete sort of thing. I'm always going to weight train. I love it. And honestly, I'm probably always going to be like pushing for a big bench because it's fun. And what guy doesn't want a big bench?
Right.
But I'm not going to wreck my body in order to do it. And something you pointed out is such a good point. I love most of my clients. I always keep between 80 and 100 clients at a time.
Okay.
And I would say about 15 to 20 are serious competitors and the rest are lifestyle clients.
Yeah.
I love working with both demographics, but I'll just be honest, and my athletes know this, I get a lot of joy. I get more joy now, and maybe it's because I'm getting older, out of getting a guy's type 2 diabetes under control, getting him off of Lipitor and statins, than I do getting somebody 50 pounds in their deadlift.
Sure.
And that's probably a feature of age and having kids and starting to think long-term and instead of thinking about, you know, my deadlift.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so I'm kind of excited, but one of the things I've had to overcome is something you said is like, there's this perception with the fitness industry that health is what the fitness industry is. And it's like, no, those two are not synonymous. Like a six pack does not equate health. It's fun to have, but that doesn't equate health. And I preach health and fitness all the time. And so one of the disconnects I think some people who aren't in that world make is they're like, huh, he preaches health and fitness, but I see what he does. So if I want to be healthy and fit, do I have to be in the gym 6 days a week, do jujitsu, do 2 hours of cardio? Because I can't do that. And therefore, that message is tuned out. Right. And it's like, hey, no, there, a baseline level of fitness and health is like, hey, eat 90% whole foods, go for a walk and get like 7 to 10K steps a day, and resistance train for like 30 to 40 minutes three times a week. If every American did that, boom.
Game changer.
Amazing changes.
Yeah. And it's crazy because when you look at, like you said, what is shown that most people see, like off the bat, and that's, I think, probably the really poor job that those of us in the fitness industry have done, because it's more about showing what we're doing a lot of times. And people will see, like you said, that's what he's doing. That's the result. Therefore, like, it's the transitive property. You know, it's like, if this is what it is, then this is what it takes to get there. But it's also the same thing when you look at sports performance, which is when it drives me crazy. I just had a buddy of mine who trains primarily youth, like high schoolers, middle schoolers for sport, right? Like, and actually does weight training and stuff with them. And he's like, you see these guys doing all these drills in their off seasons that are NFL pro guys. And then the dad of the kid thinks that that's what they need to be doing to get better. But you're like, you're discounting the 20 years of boring stuff he did that got him good enough to be the pro player. And now this is what he needs to stay at this level. And even that, sometimes I'm like, maybe that's not even necessary for that guy either. But, you know, but you're discounting the dude was probably just doing real boring stuff and was really good at it and did it for a really long time to get there. You know,
Michael Jordan shot 1,000 free throws a day.
Like,
he never outgrew the basics. And that's why they were so great.
Exactly. So I want to ask too, like, when you're in that, in this couple weeks ago, you're in the hospital and you'd said before we hit record, it was like, this is the longest gap you'd like basically ever had of not really training for like, a week, right? When you're in the hospital. But as you're sitting there, you probably have like, you know, a lot of time to ponder and to think about the next steps. And you said you're excited about it, but was there that moment where it did kind of feel heavy and you're like, this sucks a lot, you know, and it does, but how was that transition? And even if it was just a couple of moments or what it was, like, did you hit that moment during that week too? And what was it that kind of like switched it around and you're like, okay, we'll be good with this. I can now use this.
Yeah. Again, I think I'm really blessed in how quickly that comes about, because I know that transition for some people could be months or even years long of depression. It hit me. It was day two that I was in the hospital. And the second that he said, you have left ventricular hypertrophy.
Yeah.
It was at that moment I knew, hey, I'm not doing this show. Cause I still thought, hey, okay, cool. This sucks. I'm in the hospital. Like, I'm not training. I'm not whatever, but, you know, it's fine. I could make this up. It's 1 week and I'm still plotting in my head how to finish this prep. The second he said you have left ventricular hypertrophy, I have kids, man.
Yeah.
I have kids and I want to be here for my grandkids. It was a split second no-brainer. I'm done. I literally already I got rid of all the gear in my house. I don't have it. It's not a temptation. I have a vial of testosterone in the bathroom. That's what I have.
Yeah.
And I immediately went from that. I'm like, okay, 200 mgs a week. And then I scheduled a follow-up with my doctor and I was like, hey, here's exactly what I'm doing. Here's everything I take. I still take about 30 horse pills a day, you know, worth of ancillary supplements, liver support, cell support, all this stuff. Right. I guess I just credit that to my faith. But again, I also, like I said, I knew this day was coming. Right. So it wasn't like I had not thought about this before.
Sure.
And was pouring my heart and soul, because I had given myself in my head, there's a deadline. Like, my kids are getting older. My daughter's 11. My son does jujitsu with me and he wants to compete and he's getting old. They want to hunt with me, which I love that. I am not about to be in the middle of preps, not taking my kids out hunting. So there was a finite window anyways, and that window was closing. And so, yeah, I was bummed for like, oh man, I just put in so much work on this prep, but I wanted to win this show. But it was like a split second. This is a no brainer. You like, you're coming off all gear and we're focusing on health because that's what matters. My family matters infinitely more than a plastic trophy or a sword from a competition.
All right, everybody, you guys know that I'm a coffee guy, so I got to take a minute here and tell you about Steady Grounds Coffee Company. As a micro roaster, they are all about quality and freshness. They craft unique blends and they're roasting everything to order, which is crazy. If you're a fan of the big, rich and bold flavor or more subtle and nuanced, Steady Grounds, Georgian CT Adams out of Madison, Mississippi, they've got you covered. For their blends, Steady Grounds meticulously selects and combines high quality beans to create these really unique and flavorful profiles. The blend development process involves testing, experimentation, which is what we did with the Nomad Dark Roast, which I'm really excited for you guys to try if you haven't gotten a bag yet. They roast every bag made to order, which allows them to tailor the roast level to the customer's preference, and it maintains peak freshness. This is so when you get your bag, it is absolutely as fresh as it can be, and you can enjoy the full spectrum of flavor in every cup. I'm telling you, it is the real deal. So go to steadygroundscoffeeco.com, get whatever bag you want. But if you want to get the Nomad Dark Roast, obviously that's my favorite one, but you can use the code NOMAD15 at checkout for 15% discount on your entire order. So go to steadygroundscoffeeco.com and get your hands on a cup of amazing, exceptional coffee. What I think is really amazing about that and encouraging too, because I've talked to a lot of guys that come from, and sometimes it's not even guys that make it to the professional level. Sometimes it's guys that are just like at an advanced collegiate level, or they do something maybe a little bit beyond that, but not quite, you know, world level type stuff. But like you said, their identity is so wrapped up in the thing that they're doing that once that's gone, whether voluntarily or not, it's like they're lost. And there's, it's, this was, and they always say like, this is who I am. And so without it, who am I, kind of a thing. And, right, and like you said, that can take years, if ever, for some guys to get over. So it's a really encouraging thing that you were in such a solid place already. That's like, it wasn't even a second thought. Like you said, it happened instantly, right? I'm done. Boom. Toss it. Like, I'm good.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And I think a lot of guys are not in that place, especially ones that compete at any remote high level. And sometimes, like I said, even not like high level stuff. You know what I mean? It's just, it's something that they wrap themselves around so much that that becomes the thing.
Right. Right. And I would encourage guys, if you're listening to this, like, there's a proverb that says it is good for a man to bear the yoke in his youth. In other words, when you're young, do hard things, get after it. And, you know, again, I'm not judging anybody for running gear because I did. And to be honest, I don't know that I would change it.
Sure.
Because it led me to where I am today. I tried to do things correctly. Hopefully I could be a voice of reason and help for people in the future. You know, everybody takes risks. Some guys choose to do it with Deca and 900 pound yoke runs. Other people do it with Netflix binges and a box of Twinkies. Either way, life is terminal and we're all taking risks. So again, I'm still going to urge caution there, but I would encourage guys to like think about what your purpose and mission in life is, because it's not the weight room. I mean, even if it's, I'm still a coach full time. This is my job, but it's not my identity. Right. And I think part of the thing that helped me too is because I had gone through a crisis slash of faith, and there was a period of time where my wife and I's marriage was very much on the rocks. And a lot of that was due to my obsession with strongman. And I was just an absent father and an absent husband. And so I kind of already had to work through that and give up that idol.
Yeah.
And so I did. And I'm just a competitive person. If I lost my legs tomorrow, I would take up chess. Like I would compete in something.
Find something.
I just love it. I'd be the wheelchair basketball guy. I don't know. But I kind of already worked through that. And so when I decided to do bodybuilding, I entered it with a different mindset.
Yeah.
So bodybuilding was never my identity.
Sure.
It was a thing I wanted to do and a thing I wanted to pursue. So I did. What kid doesn't want to be Arnold?
Right.
so yeah, I think, you know, I guess I had my I had my difficult moment of letting go of an idol and letting something not be my identity, like 4 years ago when I left Strongman. So maybe that helped to serve me here and now. But yeah, I feel very fortunate. I'm like excited about this next phase. You know,
awesome.
Bummed I couldn't compete. I'm not gonna lie. Like, it's gonna be a bummer. I'm totally gonna stalk the people that do compete at that show and be like, oh, I could have beat that guy.
Yeah.
Right.
If I was there.
If I was there on that day. Yeah, you can't play that game. But yeah, I'm excited about this next phase.
I'm curious about, from a physiological perspective, the immediate removal of all of these things that you were doing previously. Like you said, when you toss all that stuff out of your house, what is that, just from a how you feel perspective, what is that transition like from something that you were doing for a period of time and then now it's cold turkey, it's gone? Like, how are you feeling during all that? What is that process like?
Yeah. Well, I was, like I said, I was already resolute that this was going to happen. So
yeah.
I just, anything that was like all the stuff I had, I'm like, we're out of here. So I just threw it out, kept my, now granted, I'm still on 200 migs a week. So from a physiologic perspective, I'm not going to feel terrible. I felt like absolute dog crap in the hospital for a week. So comparatively, anything felt awesome.
Right.
But what's wild is I honestly didn't expect to stay this lean. I went into the hospital at 223 and I was sitting at about 7% body fat. And this morning I was 229. So I'm only 6 pounds up in the last three weeks, but I'm eating like a horse. Now, I've always been health conscious, the coach, but my middle son has autism. So like, we're one of those particularly crunchy people. Like, I don't eat seed oils for the most part. And I got zealous about it and I'm like, drinking A2 raw milk from the Amish farm right beside me. And so like my diet is like dialed in, but man, my calories are up like 1,000 to 1,400 the last 3 weeks. And I'm like, I'm up 6 pounds. I'm still single digit body fat percentage. And the day they released me from the hospital, I went and trained chest. Cause they cleared me for upper body.
Right.
So I'm doing upper, I'm going to get yoked over the next, you know, just upper body 4 days a week. So physiologically, actually, I feel fantastic because
that's awesome.
I was in prep and I felt like absolute death. So now I have calories back in me. The gear is out of me. So I lost, you know, again, I wasn't taking anything insane. It was like 400 primo, 750 test. There towards the end, I had like 50 migs of Winnie in as we were leaning down, and I was on 4 IUs or 6 IUs of HGH. So I pulled all of that. And so naturally, there's a lot of water drop. So I think that's why I'm staying pretty, but the lower body weight, there's lower blood pressure, if I can speak, lower heart rate. So honestly, I feel great.
Yeah.
I feel
that's awesome. I'm always curious about that. Cause I always wonder, and I'm sure it's probably dose dependent, right? Like if you're pumping a large amount of stuff in or whatever, I am always curious if there's some sort of, for lack of a better term, like withdrawal period with a lot of that stuff and how you deal with it, you know?
I don't know. I think it probably is individual because I've heard of that. I've heard of guys like really struggling with that. I think, again, it comes back to the identity piece where, well, to be perfectly honest, a lot of guys that blast a lot of gear don't know how to train. And this is another thing I want to show people. Like, I'm on 200 megs of TRT. I came off of a lot of stuff. I'm hitting PRs. I'm still vascular. I don't plan on getting weak. Am I ever going to be I'm not pulling 800 pounds again. I don't want to. But I mean, I benched 4 today effortlessly. And my aim is to get that back over 5 at like a body weight of 220, 225. And while I'm banging out 15 to 20 pull-ups, doing pistol squats, jujitsu, I just want to be all around strong, fit, and capable and show guys like, look, it's your training intensity. It's your recovery. It's your food. It's the quality of all that stuff together. Drugs work. Otherwise people wouldn't take them.
Right.
But it's like 5% of the equation.
Yeah.
If you remove the drugs and your whole physique melts away, you have been doing something entirely wrong for a very long time.
So like, with the training part, what do you think is lacking? And maybe not even just with guys that you said are on some form of gear, because if they're not training properly and then that all goes away, maybe just in general, like your lifestyle clients, what's generally missing from how they train that would help them in that situation where it's like, it doesn't matter if you're on the stuff or not, like you're training the correct way. Like, what does that look like for you?
Probably intensity is what's missing for a lot of people. Yeah. You know, I never took my first shot of test until I was 30. Okay. And I said to myself, you need to deadlift 600, squat 5, bench 4.
Yeah.
And I think I overhead pressed like 285. So I had well over a decade of strength training under my belt before I ever touched anything. And then just learning how to push people. So many times, you know, I don't believe that you need to train to failure. You don't have to train like Dorian Yates to get progress.
Right.
But if you're 8 reps away from failure,
yeah,
you know, kudos to you. Anybody that we all know, the people that we see at the gym for the 10 straight years and they never look any different, kudos to them for being in the gym because they're certainly not getting hurt and they're right. at least burning calories. But yeah, if you want to grow, I mean, it's got to hurt. You got to make those reps count. Like if they don't hurt, you're not making some like intense faces at the end of a set. Well, I don't know what to tell you.
And that's what I think was one of the, and say what you will about the rest of the methodology and how it's practiced today. But that's what I think CrossFit did really well, especially at the beginning, was like teach people how to train hard that never had before and like bring that sort of intensity into a training session, which is why I think at the, you know, the first handful of years, everybody's like, everybody looks great that's doing this. And it's like, well, yeah, because they were actually training hard at a thing that they were like, they never had that intensity before. So I think that allure of that is what probably did so well for it at the beginning.
Absolutely. And what a lot of young guys nowadays don't understand is when you look at like Jay Cutler and Ronnie Coleman and Dorian Yates and all of those guys, like they trained brutally hard and they trained in the power lifts in their off season.
Yeah,
sure. As they ramped up towards show prep, they're not going to be doing back squats 8 weeks out from. That's just stupid. They're depleted. It's just unwise. But those guys went heavy. They went hard. That's how you build density. Arnold was a powerlifter first.
Yeah,
that's how you build muscular density. And so, the intensity piece. And if I could do things backwards, and this is what I do with my strength athletes now, my strongman. Here's what a typical boneheaded strongman training cycle would look like back in the day. I'd go in for an overhead press day and I'm supposed to work up to a heavy set of 3, RPE 8. It turns into a heavy double at a RPE 12. So then I'm tired and I shut it down.
I'm feeling good. I can't waste it today. I'm feeling good.
Yeah. Cook when the fire's hot. And then, so you drop the log or whatever implement you're pressing and, oh, you see, I've got standing dumbbell push press, 2 sets of 20. And so you go over there and you grab like 55s and you go through the motions.
Yeah.
If I could do anything, and what I make my athletes do is like, hey, I would rather you do your main movements and leave like a rep or two in the tank and go hard on those accessories. Those accessories are going to be what facilitates you playing this game for a long time. And preventing injury and building all that. So, but these are the things that you seem to only learn in hindsight.
Exactly. Plus, like in that scenario, that's sometimes I think an easier sell for a lot of people too, because it's like, who doesn't want to just go in and get a crazy arm pump? It's like you know what I mean? If that's like, just go just absolutely destroy your arms, and like that can be good.
100%. You know? Absolutely. Well, and a lot of guys too, a lot of the younger guys that train bodybuilding, they don't understand the purpose of the pump. And a lot of times all I'll do is they'll come in and just get a pump and leave. And they don't understand why they don't make any gains.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, there's different types of hypertrophy. Like there's that myofibular hypertrophy, then there's that sarcoplasmic hypertrophy, and they work together. And if you skip either one, you have a subpar physique. So, you know, typically your powerlifters and your strongmen are really good at that myofibular. They just care about moving weight from A to B. And then we don't really, I mean, like when I came into bodybuilding, my physique was so jacked up because I had size, but it was incidental. It was the size required for strongman.
Right.
And it was like the only thing in strongman that's really posterior chain dominant is like deadlift and then the initial pick of a farmer's carry, but pretty much everything's front loaded. So, and I was a great presser. So I had these fantastic, huge delts I never curled a day in my life. So I had these really goofy looking arms because I had no biceps on me. My quads were massive because, again, everything's front loaded. Yep. And front squats are kind of the main thing, or safety bar squat to save your shoulders so that you can press. And so I had, I mean, it was pathetic. I front squatted 585. And like, it was a place where my back squat was like 650 and my front squat was like 585. That's way too close. Right. So I come into bodybuilding with like zero glutes or hamstrings, but a massive back and massive quads. I was all sorts of just
all over the place.
That's why I was so excited about this show. My first bodybuilding competition, like I looked pretty good,
yeah,
but I still looked like a strength athlete trying to do bodybuilding.
Sure.
And now I feel like, oh, I finally, by not deadlifting for 3 years and tightening my waist, I finally started to look like a bodybuilder. You know, yeah. 'Cause it's just, I had the size in the right spots this time. So.
Right. That's it. And that's always really funny when you go from one discipline to the next, that it feels really like beginner gains again, you know, like when you're training for so long in a singular modality or for a single thing. And then you're like, I'm going to go do this thing that's totally different over here. You're like, holy cow, I was not doing any of this before. What is, like, this is awesome. I'm experiencing all these new positive effects and gains, and it's great.
I mean, what you just said, though, that's the mindset of a true athlete, because some people get discouraged when they have their coach assigns them a new movement and they're really weak at it.
Yeah.
I get pumped when I find out something that I really suck at, because I go, holy crap, if I build this up, here's the seven ways it carries over to this other thing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm glad when I find stuff. Bodybuilding was so humbling. I remember, I'm like, dude, I'm a 750-pound squatter. The first time my coach programmed me, like, ass to grass pendulum squats, I put on like two plates and was crying in a set of 12. I was like, this is stupid. What is happening here?
It's crazy. I did a couple years ago. Done.
Like, okay, this is pathetic.
A couple years ago, I did a block in preparation for my first jiu-jitsu meet at White Belt. And this was about 2.5, almost 3 years ago. And I had followed for a long time this guy on Instagram whose account goes by Strongman Archaeology. And his name is James Fuller. His name is James Fuller. But he specializes in all these old time lifts, like that nobody does anymore. And the whole, like, hack lifts and bent presses and side presses and you know, loading the bar, continental deals where you're loading the bar up onto your back to get it up on.
Yeah.
All these awesome things. And when I talked to him, he said this style of training is so married to grappling, because all these guys that developed these lifts, that's what they did. They were wrestlers. And at the time, you know, there's no squat racks, you know? Right. So he's like, if you're going to squat heavy and put a bar on your back, you have to pick it up from the ground. So you have to find out these efficient ways to get a heavy bar from the ground onto your back. And so he's got guys doing like Steinborns and then like loading on the low back and hiking it up. And so I did this basically just about 5 month block with him, and my grip strength and my left to right balance and strength, and especially like with arms, with extremities, like outreached long lever stuff, went off the charts because of like all these things and learning the moves that he was sending me. I would get so frustrated, dude, but it was like a good frustrated, because I'm like, he's doing it and he's like in his, you know, 50s and just throwing just stupid weights around. And I'm trying to do this one thing with like a 26-pound kettlebell. And I'm like, I am getting smoked by this thing right now.
Right.
And
like, I am so weak.
I loved it. I'm like, oh, I haven't had that moment of really sucking at something. Then like having the drive to want to be better at it. 'Cause then I'm like, all I want to do is this one movement. I'll spend 3 hours out here doing this if I can practice this. Yeah. And so there, I think that is a big key in not only the progress of doing things you haven't done, but also just the enjoyment and like people want to the retention of wanting to stay and continue to train. 'Cause it's like, you're challenging not only physically, but mentally too. And that can sometimes be the biggest deal for some people, is just that mental push
for jiu-jitsu. Absolutely. Right. Yeah. Now. I'm pumped to go all in on that, because I've only dabbled for the last 3 years because, you know, the last year and a half, I've been super dedicated at least 2 to 3 days a week Yeah. But there's always something that comes up, an injury or bodybuilding competition or something that gets in the way. So I'm pumped to start hitting the mats more. I have my first private boxing lesson on Monday. Can't wait.
Oh, nice. Getting some stand-up stuff too.
Yes, sir. Yeah. That's awesome. Gotta be well-rounded.
That's awesome, dude. I want to take this not in a different direction, but an adjacent one, because a lot of the stuff that you and I have connected, especially over Twitter, on is going to be a lot of faith-based stuff, right?
Sure.
And you have, I'm trying to remember if it was a few weeks ago, but you had talked about a lot of the stuff that we see as it relates in Christian circles with health, sometimes or oftentimes is lacking or backwards, or a lot of things, how Christians perceive training your bodies, right?
Sure.
And especially men. And so I want to, you know, where did this become such an important thing for you? Obviously, because it's what you do for a living, right? But how did you go about seeing the actual blend of importance between those two things?
That's interesting. Well, because you're asking the question, I guess, of, if I'm going to clarify here.
Yeah.
When did the light bulb come on for you? Like, hey, Christians should care about their health and fitness. Honestly, I think over the last 4 years with COVID, the veil has been pulled back, and everybody's kind of realized, hey, the government's not responsible for your health like you are.
Yeah.
Okay. But particularly, I think some of the books that I had read around what is the purpose of being a man. There's a book that I love. It's called It's Good to Be a Man by Michael Foster.
Yeah, great book.
I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. Yep. It's a fantastic book. Actually, Cam Haines was reading it and shared it, and then Joe Rogan shared it. I thought that was so cool. I know Michael Foster. He's a really good guy. And it was really good, and he got my thoughts moving in a more long-term direction. So American Christianity tends to have this sort of retreatist, let's hunker down and take a beating for Jesus until he comes back. And that's just kind of, I just don't buy that. I just don't believe it. Genesis, we're told to take dominion of this earth. And what that means is use the earth and its resources to our ends for good, to spread good throughout the world. And a rejection of that is essentially a rejection of old heresy called Gnosticism. For those listening, Gnosticism is just this idea that, or dualism, Platonic dualism, that matter is evil, the physical is tainted and bad, and all that we care about is spiritual. And so only the spiritual matters. And a lot of people would reject that sort of thing or thinking. But when you look at their lives, they're Christians, they're practically Gnostics, because they don't take care of anything physical, right?
Sure.
Especially in American evangelicalism that has a very kind of dispensational framework. I know I'm throwing a lot of words out there that might not even be familiar to your, to your listeners, but essentially, again, it comes back to that whole just retreatism. Hunker down, take a beating, and just wait for Jesus to come. And I just don't buy that. I believe that I am thinking about my grandkids. I found a letter from my great, great, great grandmother. And in that letter, it was a Christmas card, and she was writing to her kids, and she was talking about how she prayed for her great grandkids. She didn't even know them.
That's so cool.
I'm like, man, that's wild. The church that we go to is the oldest Reformed church in Pennsylvania. And in the stained glass, it started in 1725. And there's the name of my fifth great grandfather as part of the founding consistory of that church.
That's awesome.
And I'm like, that's a legacy. And so I need to start thinking long-term. A wise man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. And when you just start thinking of all these things, what inheritance? Well, sure, financial could be part of it, but one of wisdom. What does a wise? And so you start reading the Proverbs, and I think, you know, some people might say, well, fitness is never really directly addressed in the Bible. Like, you don't see a verse that says, you know, be ye not fat, get to the gym. Right?
but and even if there was, there'd be a way for some people to say that's not
correct.
What it says.
Exactly right. I think here's the thing about theology. Theology is never clarified or ever done for fun. So like when they came up with the Nicene Creed, it wasn't a bunch of, you know, young Bible college nerds sitting around a coffee shop in Constantinople or in Rome rather, being like, hey, let's figure out the doctrine of the Trinity. No, it was decided and discussed and debated over several decades of fierce conflict. Conflict is always what brings things out. And so COVID is a period of conflict, particularly around health. And there needs to be a human, or there needs to be rather a biblical theological understanding of health. Okay. Because the government answer ain't it. So what does the Bible say? And I think that I'm convinced that the reason it's not really mentioned directly, but it's mentioned, it's assumed. That's the point. Sure. It's assumed. And so you read about the story in Genesis where Lot is captured. So they make war. Well, it says they're, so the assumption is they trained. Like, these are men skilled in the art of violence. Like, this is what they do. They have this skill. They've trained for this skill.
Yep.
King David, the story of David and Goliath, right? You know, yes, obviously God is with him, but what people overlook is this is a teenager. And he raises his hand to Saul and says, hey, I'll go do it. I'll fight him. I was watching my dad's sheep out in the field, and there was a lion, and I killed it. And there was a bear that was coming after the sheep, and I killed that too. I could take him. Right?
Yeah, right.
My favorite passage is in the health and fitness space, everybody is obsessed with longevity. As a Christian, I believe what God's word says, which is my days are numbered. I can't add a single hour to my life. So then what am I doing as a health coach? Well, I can't add a day to your life, but I think I can add life to your days. I can lengthen your health span. And so my aim is Joshua chapter 14, Caleb says, I am 85 years old today, and I am as strong as I ever was for coming and going and making war. Let me go up and take this land. That's what I want to be. I want to go out old and like still ready to get after it. And so when you look at the New Testament, all the metaphors that Paul uses for the Christian life, he says, it's like a soldier. It's like a farmer. It's like an athlete. He uses athletics, farming, and soldiering. These are all heavily physical disciplines. And in the past, obesity and gluttony really kind of a thing. Poor, we're just happy to survive. So that we need to start talking about, like, hey, if you're 100 pounds overweight, like, this is actually a spiritual problem. It's because for most of human history, it didn't exist. And it's a testament to our decadence and abundance and our worshiping the gift instead of the giver, right? Like, so I think for me, that's a really long-winded answer to your question. But I think the Bible does have things to say about fitness, and most of them just happen to be kind of implied things. And this idea that you need an exact scripture verse to prove a point, it shows that you don't understand scripture. There's one point where Paul is talking in the New Testament, and they're talking about length of hair. And again, I don't think Paul's talking about necessarily like, when he's talking about it's a shame for a man to have long hair. He's talking about gender distinctions. I don't think he means like shaggy hair or whatever else. Like, he's clearly making clear gender distinctions. If a dude has long flowing hair down to his feet, it's kind of like, what? And he doesn't even make this feel, he doesn't appeal to some Old Testament passage. He goes, doesn't nature itself teach you? Like, his appeal is, duh, bro. Like, that's his entire logic there is, duh, bro. Like, I don't even need to, we don't need Deuteronomy for this, man. This is common sense.
Maybe the correct interpretation of it, but it's always what I've sort of maybe thought was being referenced when in the New Testament we're told that your body is a temple, right? Your body is the new temple. And what I always think of is when you go back and you look in the Old Testament verses about how particular the instructions were on how to build the temple or how to build like the tabernacles and where the ark was and all the, like how specific the instructions were. It wasn't just like throw it in whatever shed you find. You know what I mean? Like, and if our bodies are the new temple, it's like, there's probably got to be in pretty decent shape in order to do what it's supposed to do. And like, that's, and so that's always the interpretation of it that I mean, and like you said, it's sort of maybe adjacent. It's not explicitly said that, but that was always one that just sort of jumped out as like, well, you can't have a temple that's like, you know, boards are falling off and like it wasn't, there's no attention detail. It's going to sink if there's any sort of rain coming through or whatever. So it's like, you have to have this thing put together pretty well, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, 100%. I think that's a perfectly worthy implication from that text.
Really what was interesting was what happened 4 years ago during COVID was sort of like an awakening to a lot of degrees for people, especially in Christian circles, like we're talking about. But there was this idea of health that maybe they didn't know that they needed to have this conversation of, and were made acutely aware of it because of all the stuff that happened 4 years ago, or the people that were kind of ignoring it, like as part of this, and I probably should or whatever, now also became acutely aware of how important this is. And I think that is ultimately going to be something that works itself out in a very positive way over the coming years in, as it relates to health in Christian circles. But is that kind of like how you experienced a lot of that stuff from these last handful of years also?
Oh, absolutely. I think, like I said, I think if I already repeated this earlier, I apologize, but I'm talking about this all the time. And I feel like COVID really did open a lot of people's eyes. Like, it's not the government's job to take care of you. It's your job. You are responsible. And it also kind of created a well-deserved distrust of institutions. I actually saw a friend's comment on Facebook today, and he said something to the effect of phrases like "the experts say" or "studies show" were used as kind of a magic spell over the populace, and COVID and the government and unfortunately many churches' responses to that, while they were poor responses, it almost served in a good way to break that spell. And so people are beginning to realize like, hey, I need to take personal responsibility.
Yeah, it really was. And like, unsurprisingly, especially with health, any stance you, and this is with everything, but then you combine the two things that people fight over the most, it seems anymore, is anything related to faith and religions. And then health, like those are the two things. The two things that people will always have something to say about something. So even with all these things that we are associating with, this can be a really positive change for people in the church to make them healthier, make them stronger. And then there's still people in the church that are against that, or saying that, or creating the ever popular sort of straw man argument that we're saying things we're not saying about it.
Correct.
Like that this is the most important thing you could ever be doing. Like nobody's saying that.
Yeah. Like, I hate when people do that whole sort of thing when they attack you for essentially you're convicted about a thing and they say, they make it seem like that's your entire message. It's no, we want to be sons of Issachar and discern the times. And so, no, I'm not saying that, you know, lifting weights and caring about your health and doing all these things is the most important thing on planet Earth in your life at all times right now. But in the space that we're in, it's a major thing that we're lacking in. Yeah. It's going to have devastating consequences. We should address this. It's not that hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And even Paul says, like you were talking about Paul before too, where he says he makes all these analogies to physical exertions in varying degrees, running the race, like soldiers, all of these things. Right. And he even uses the phrase like physical training is of some value.
That's right.
Like he doesn't say it has no value or it has more than all this value. Like there is value there to be had.
Absolutely.
So it's like, assumed. It's assumed. So like, we can't look at that and assume the other thing that's like, well, we can't disregard this completely.
Yeah. And let's remember that the Apostle Paul made fun of an entire cultural group when he called the Cretans lazy, fat liars, essentially, whose God is their belly. I mean, and so again, it's assumed. There's a physical right. readiness. Be strong like a man. I mean, the Bible literally right. says that.
Yes.
Because yes. there's a way that men show themselves strong, particularly men show themselves strong by provision and protection of those yeah. that they love. And that protection assumes physical capability, both in some kind of martial virtue and some kind of physical capability. Doesn't mean that yeah. all of David's warriors had abs, but David's right. warriors were mighty men who could swing a sword, right?
Yeah. Yeah, swords are heavy.
Yeah, they're very heavy. Yes,
you have to be able to do it. It's funny, like the assumption of protection assumes you're capable of it.
Absolutely. How many of these guys? Yeah. I love those memes that make fun of the dudes that are just like, "Come on, bro, I get it. You're wearing a 9-line apparel T-shirt. You're 75 pounds overweight, and you just yeah. think you're going to shoot somebody, or I'll just see red, bro. No, you won't.
Yeah,
exactly. You will have a heart attack." Before yeah. you're a liability. You're not on, you know, is what I'm saying. So
100%. And one of my favorite ones is and it's not even necessarily in Christian circles or anything like that, but it's more of the kind of more in the, like the sheepdog world
yeah.
of guys, you know what I'm talking oh, yeah. about? The guys that are like kind of the wannabe operators
yes.
kind of world, but it's like, they have all of this gear. They maybe are even great shots, like, and they're effective with tools, but it's like, dude, you can't run a mile.
Right.
Like, you are toast.
Right.
If anything comes to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. It's so funny to watch.
Oh man. Well, dude, we should wrap it up. I know we've got stuff, going on and I really appreciate you sticking around and having this chat, man. I've been looking forward to it for a long time, so I really appreciate it. Why don't we close out by throwing all your plugs out there? Where can people sure. follow you if they want the internet friendly stuff on Instagram or the not internet friendly stuff on X?
Yeah, that's right.
And then all your coaching stuff, just yeah, all the absolutely. Plugs, man.
Okay, cool. Well, I appreciate it. Well, first off, again, thank you for inviting me on here. I feel honored. So I'm on Instagram as Meathead Professor. There's a story behind that for a later date. I'm on X or Twitter as Coach Anthony Deal. I'm on Facebook as Anthony Deal. I'm active pretty much all of those three places. And then my website is newvisionperformance.com. So you can find me at any one of those places, and I'm pretty quick to respond.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it a lot, brother, and we'll talk soon, all right?
Absolutely.